tonight. Secret sources revealed the report sending shockwaves across Washington that those claims from the Republican Intelligence Committee chief came from White House officials. Was it part of a smokescreen to give cover to President Trump's unproven wiretapping claims? Church bus tragedy. The investigation into a head-on horror on the highway. Over a dozen elderly passengers killed. Bathroom bill battle facing a deadline from NCAA basketball. Lawmakers reach a deal to roll back that controversial law. But critics say it's not over yet. Death in the cockpit, a fatal emergency at the controls. Passengers unaware as the captain lands the plane alone. An inspiring America. Strangers making a dream come true after a chance encounter at the drive-thru. Nightly news begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening to our viewers in the West. A report out tonight is adding to the growing mystery and controversy surrounding the White House and the Republican head of the House Intelligence Committee, the man in charge of the Russia investigation. And it all leads back to that still unsubstantiated claim by President Trump that President Obama wiretapped Trump Tower. The mystery centers in what Congressman Devin Nunes told the president and reporters about intelligence he had seen, about government surveillance that might at first glance appear to support some of the president's story. It didn't. And now tonight, the New York Times is reporting that the trail leading to the source of that intel is a very short one. NBC's Peter Alexander has details.
Tonight, that New York Times report says a pair of White House officials played a role in this stunning allegation 8 days ago. The Republican chair of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, charging U.S. spies incidentally surveilled President-elect Trump.
The president-elect and his team were, I guess, at least monitored.
Now the Times identifying those officials as 32-year-old Michael Ellis, a White House lawyer who formerly worked on the House Intelligence Committee staff, and 30-year-old Ezra Cohen Watnick, the senior director for intelligence at the National Security Council. Sources tell NBC News President Trump recently overruled an attempt to fire Cohen Watnick, a protege of ousted National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Nunes has repeatedly refused to reveal his source, but says even though he reviewed the information on White House grounds, White House officials were not involved.
No, and in fact, I'm quite sure that I think people in the West Wing had no idea that I was there.
But if that source turns out to be a White House official, it would be an explosive twist in a drama that critics say started in an effort to back up the president's unsubstantiated claim he was wiretapped by President Obama. Last Wednesday, Nunes comes under fire when he shares the new information, not with his committee colleagues, but with the press and the president, who said he felt vindicated.
I somewhat do. I must tell you, I somewhat do.
Then Thursday, spokesman Sean Spicer dismisses suggestions Nunes got his information from the White House.
I don't know why he would come up to brief the president on something that we gave him. So I'm not aware of it, but it doesn't really pass the smell test.
But today, Spicer deflecting questions about the report.
I'm not going to get into any further details on this.
Instead announcing this letter inviting the bipartisan leaders of the intelligence committees to review new evidence that may show information collected about Americans was mishandled and leaked.
We are willing to provide them with the information that we have, the materials that we have come across. And I think that is an important step.
The top Democrat on the House committee tonight accepting that offer, but pouncing on the Times report and questioning the White House's transparency.
Is this instead a case where they wish to effectively launder information through our committee to avoid the true source of the information? That question the White House really needs to answer.
With the House committee paralyzed by politics, the Senate panel today hosting its first Russia hearing and taking a shot at its House colleagues.
The vice chairman and I realize that if we politicize this process, our efforts will likely fail.
Tonight, a former top White House official tells NBC News whoever originally accessed the intelligence reports shown to Chairman Nunes must have been an insider here at the National Security Council because no one else, they say, would have had access to those secure computers. Lester?
Peter Alexander, a lot to chew on. Thanks. Let's bring in our political director, the moderator of Meet the Press, Chuck Todd. Chuck, these new revelations in the New York Times, one report. If, in fact, the White House was involved in secretly giving this information to Nunes, what's the fallout?
Look, the fallout is big. I mean, this is a classic case where is the cover-up worse than the crime itself, although what's being investigated obviously is very serious here. But the fact of the matter is this would be an indication that the White House is now interfering with an investigation. And the fact is, it is amazing that the White House essentially now is being consumed by this Russia story, and perhaps the president himself, because at the end of the day, this sort of consuming by the Russia story led to the president's tweet, which then in turn created a series of events that is essentially unraveled on the White House. It got the director of the FBI to not only push back on the accusation, but then confirm that there's an investigation. It has undone the House investigation. It has probably permanently poisoned Devin Nunes' ability to help conduct an investigation, somebody that was once a White House ally. And now they're in a situation where their own credibility is being called into question on everything. This is a situation where they've had a bad problem on their hands in Russia, Lester, and their own actions have made it worse.
All right, Chuck Todd, thank you, Chuck. And meantime, the man who ultimately is at the center of these investigations in Congress, Russian President Vladimir Putin, spoke out today, and he issued a flat denial, borrowing a famous American phrase. Take a look.
You and the Russian government did never try to influence the outcome of the U.S. presidential election, and there will be no evidence found.
Ronald Reagan, once debating about taxes and addressing the Americans, said, watch my lips. He said, no, watch my lips, no.
Of course, it wasn't Reagan who said, read my lips. It was George H.W. Bush, who then went on to break that promise when he raised taxes. Another challenge for the president, the revolt by members of his own party. And it had the president lashing out today at that group of conservative Republicans. He warned that unless they fall into line, he would help defeat them in the next election. But there was more defiance today. Let's get the latest from NBC's Kristen Welker.
Thank you very much. We were very close.
Tonight, less than a week after praising conservatives in the House Freedom Caucus who rejected his Obamacare repeal.
No, I'm not betrayed. They're friends of mine.
President Trump now casting blame, intensifying his attacks in a new tweet this morning, suggesting he might even back primary challengers. The Freedom Caucus will hurt the entire Republican agenda if they don't get on the team and fast. We must fight them and Dems in 2018. But signs tonight that strategy is not getting those conservatives on board.
Most people don't take well to being bullied. It may allow a child to get his way, but that's not how our government works.
Many Republicans blame the conservative group for blocking the health care bill even after the president made major concessions. A frequent foe of the Freedom Caucus, House Speaker Paul Ryan, not taking sides publicly.
It's very understandable that the president is frustrated.
But unleashing his own warning to them.
If this Republican Congress allows the perfect to be the enemy of the good, I worry we'll push the president into working with Democrats.
Now, new indications tonight the president is trying to bounce back. A source familiar with the president's thinking tells NBC News he's working to build a consensus of moderate Republicans and even eyeing some Democrats. And he could make this fight very personal.
They're willing to send the president and his big plane to these Freedom Caucus districts. Trump's not an ideologue, and if you go against him, he has no reason not to turn against you.
Meanwhile, tonight, former President George W. Bush reportedly sending his own message about the president. After watching Mr. Trump's inaugural speech, three people reported to New York Magazine. He said that was some weird expletive. Late tonight, the president targeting three members of the Freedom Caucus on Twitter, including Chair Mark Meadows, a sign he isn't backing down from this new strategy. Lester.
All right. Kristen Welker at the White House, thanks. In the Senate, an extremely close vote today on an anti-abortion measure. So close, the vice president had to be called in for a second time to break a tie. The bill would permit conservative-leading states to reinstate policies that block Planned Parenthood clinics and other providers from getting federal funding. The measure was tied after two Republicans, Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, voted against the bill. It passed after Vice President Mike Pence cast the winning vote. It now goes to the president. In North Carolina today, the legislature today repealed the so-called bathroom bill after a year of controversy that included a major backlash by the business community. But as NBC's Maya Rodriguez reports, its replacement is drawing fresh criticism from both supporters and opponents.
After a year of protests and debate,
House Bill 142 is adopted.
Today, a deal to replace North Carolina's bathroom bill. Lawmakers were under intense pressure from the NCAA, which gave them a deadline. Repeal the bill this week or face 5 years without any championship games in the state.
Today, we repealed House Bill 2 and we begin to end discrimination.
House Bill 2, also known as the bathroom bill, required people in North Carolina to use the bathroom for the gender on their birth certificate. Critics called it discriminatory. Supporters said it was an issue of public safety.
Is this new bill an improvement?
Well, no. House Bill 2, we believe, is the best bill of this subject matter in the country.
Although the controversial deal repeals the bathroom bill, it leaves the door open for state legislators to revisit the issue. It also prevents cities from passing anti-discrimination ordinances until 2020.
It's not real repeal. It doubles down on discrimination by saying that local towns and cities can't pass vital non-discrimination ordinances for 4 years.
The original law costs North Carolina big bucks. Musicians, including Bruce Springsteen, canceled concerts. The NBA moved the 2017 All-Star Game from Charlotte to New Orleans. And companies like PayPal yanked jobs, all part of a potential loss of $3.7 billion in business in North Carolina over the next 12 years, according to the Associated Press. Tonight, no word yet if some of the lost business will return, as the debate seems far from over. Maya Rodriguez, NBC News, Raleigh, North Carolina.
We turn now to that horrific collision on a Texas highway. Emergency calls about a pickup truck driving erratically shortly before a head-on crash between a truck and a church van carrying senior citizens. 13 people were killed, and tonight investigators are trying to figure out what happened. NBC's Jacob Rascone has details.
Tonight, investigators want to know why this pickup truck veered into oncoming traffic before slamming into a church bus carrying 14 people. According to authorities, minutes before the accident, at least one other driver called police to report the pickup truck driving erratically. Just one bus passenger would survive, a devastating loss for First Baptist Church of New Braunfels.
And it makes you grateful that God allowed you to cross their path.
The victims were senior citizens, most of them widows, returning from a three-day church retreat. The bus driver, 67-year-old Mary Barrett, a former Marine and teacher, gone without a goodbye. 87-year-old Mildred Rosamond was retired and loving it. All 13 deeply missed, especially at First Baptist.
It's just hard to know you were singing with them that morning, and they're in heaven tonight, you know.
The investigation will consider whether alcohol, drugs, speed, or distracted driving were factors in the crash, as the church focuses on praying for all involved, including the truck driver and his family.
And it's just going to be difficult to keep going, but we have Jesus, and he is our strength.
Jacob Rascone, NBC News, New Braunfels, Texas.
Still ahead, as we continue here tonight, the increasingly dangerous path for pedestrians, the alarming death rate among people simply crossing the street, and what may be behind it. Also, an emergency in the cockpit of a Boeing 737 and how a calm pilot brought everyone to safety. We're back now with a new warning from federal officials to watch where you're going. There has been a sharp rise in the number of pedestrians killed each year. Officials say a lot of factors are to blame, including a growing problem afflicting not just motorists, but those on their feet, distracted walking in this case. NBC's Miguel Almaguer explains from Los Angeles.
The alarming spike in pedestrian deaths. Nearly 6,000 Americans killed while walking in 2016. The biggest increase in 20 years. According to a new study, the steady climb jumping 11% last year alone. Walking becoming more dangerous every day. Abhishek Tulsian was hit in December, lucky to survive.
I had no clue. I didn't see that car, and it just hit me.
Experts blame some of the increase on distracted driving, and now distracted walking can be just as dangerous. Near misses seen online often show it's pedestrians at fault. Some blame smartphones.
Our frenzied, you know, need to stay in touch on our smartphones is certainly a contributing factor.
Fortunately, incidents are not always fatal, but are often embarrassing. In the Netherlands, they're taking steps to keep pedestrians safe, installing light strips at crosswalks, an eye-level warning to be alert. But it will be hard to change the habits of those walking with their phones. Often preoccupied, many are oblivious to life speeding right by.
Experts say you just have to put your cell phone down, like driving.
You have to pay attention to the road. With engineers hoping speed bumps, speed limits, and roundabouts can slow drivers down, pedestrians will need to do their part too, making the roads and sidewalks safer for all. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, Los Angeles.
We are back in a moment with a severe weather that has almost 40 million people on alert. Tonight, some 36 million Americans are on alert from the Midwest all the way down into the Southeast. Strong storms are on the move with damaging winds and possible tornadoes. For the second time this week, that system will move into the east tomorrow, bringing new threats to the region. Now to what must have been a harrowing experience in the cockpit of an American Airlines flight from Dallas to Albuquerque yesterday. The plane was about to land when the co-pilot suffered what appears to have been a fatal heart attack. The passengers blissfully unaware until paramedics boarded the plane on the ground. NBC's Tom Costello has details.
The call from the captain came just as the American flight was approaching Albuquerque.
We've got an issue with one of their pilots had to declare emergency, like to have the medical crew meet us on landing.
On the ground, paramedics were unable to save the first officer, 58-year-old William Mike Grubbs. Passengers said the captain deserves great credit.
He kept his cool. He probably kept his stress level down, and all the captain tended to think about was us.
Cockpit deaths are not common, but they do happen.
It's a medical emergency. Captain is incapacitated.
In 2015, an American flight diverted to Syracuse after the captain suffered a fatal heart attack.
One of the reasons that there are two pilots in the airplane is in case one is incapacitated.
And even if a pilot goes to the lavatory, a flight attendant must take his place. In-flight medical emergencies involving passengers are fairly routine, nearly 50 each day. While fewer than 0.5% involve cardiac arrest, it accounts for 86% of all in-flight deaths. 27 times a day, flight crews call UPMC in Pittsburgh, one of two med centers that assesses a patient's condition from the ground.
Patients in whom we have a high suspicion that they're having either a heart attack or a stroke would be diverted to the closest airport and then subsequently to the closest hospital.
Commercial pilots 40 and over must undergo two physicals every year. Among the required workups, a cardiac evaluation. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
When we come back, it all began at a fast food restaurant for one young woman meeting a man who's helping her with her dream and inspiring America. Finally tonight, an exhausting job in a fast food restaurant has turned out to be the best opportunity in the world for a young woman you're about to meet. It started with a chance encounter less than a week ago with a customer who struck up a conversation and is now helping her realize her dream. Kevin Tibbles tonight with a story that's inspiring America.
Welcome to Popeyes.
A takeout order unlike any other.
Here you go.
A box chicken dinner with a side order of compassion and a biscuit. Don Carter was grabbing a late dinner last Friday night.
I see her and is visibly exhausted. And so just feeling that myself, I decided to just say a long day or something like that. Do you remember what I said?
He said it's almost over.
But something was just beginning. 28-year-old Shawana Mays works at a Kansas City Popeyes. But her dream is to someday be a nurse. In passing, she told Dawn that coming up with tuition is a constant struggle.
It's not easy doing it on your own.
Carter is a former cop providing for his own wife and kids.
Every reason of driving away, I was just thinking about what I could do to help what she was doing.
When he got home, Dawn put the word out and started a GoFundMe page. Who wanted to help send this young woman to school?
If I got 300 of them to just put $5 up, which I figured they'd be willing to do, you can do it no problem.
It didn't even take 24 hours. The $1,500 was raised.
This is something we want you to be able to do without having to worry about anything.
Thank you.
Is that cool?
The fund has now surpassed $7,500. And for this burly former detective, it's overwhelming.
So what kind of a nurse are you going to be?
I think I'm going to be the best nurse that came out of Kansas City, Missouri. That's what I believe.
That's what I believe.
A chance meeting at a drive-through window, serving up a heaping helping of kindness. Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Kansas City, Missouri.
Proving once again there's a lot of good people out there. That's going to do it for us on a Thursday night. I'm Lester Holt for all of us at NBC News. Thank you for watching, and good night.